football basement.
Gentlemen, 2012 will always be remembered as a great year for sport because the football basement is back.
Yay! Yay!
And I'm joined by four extremely talented young football pundits from left to right. Leeds fan Dave Jameson.
Yeah.
Sunderland fan Matthew Lavery. Say hello. Arsenal fan Sebastian Hutchinson. And Manchester United fan Andrew Halle.
Hello.
And I am Champions of Europe Chelsea Football Club fan Matt Rodger. Boom. Welcome. Boom. Welcome everyone to the football basement. Dick. It's been wow. As that was early on. We're about what are we now, like about 6-8 weeks into the season. It's been a long time since our last podcast, so we need a catch up. And we've all been busy, we need to know what's been going on this season that I might have missed. I'm not banging on the table anymore. Can anyone tell me something interesting I might have missed this season? Anyone at all? Dave is ready, go on, Dave.
Yes, I can tell you something very interesting for me, hardly interesting for anyone else. I don't know if you know this, but but Leeds United are on the verge of being taken over by a Bahrainian-based financial institution called Gulf Financial House.
This is the long-awaited exit of Ken Bates.
The long-awaited exit of Ken.
Is anyone going to be sad about that at Leeds United?
No, everybody's going to be relieved. The only fear is that he might be kept on as a consultant.
The only fear is he might be immortal and never die.
Well, he's Dave, 80, so...
Is he 80?
Yeah. He's been going for a while.
Dave, I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
He's good at selling clubs, though, isn't he?
He's very good at selling clubs. What was he? He bought Chelsea for £1, sold it for £140 million.
Yeah.
And who did he sell it to?
Roman.
Big Roman. So, it's a good sign, so you're saying it's a good... Well, I mean, Leeds have been crying out for a takeover, right? Is that...
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, he's managed to turn us into a profitable company.
Yeah.
We've got... operating actual profits of about a few million a year. Mainly the problem being that he keeps selling all our best players, so we end up not going anywhere.
Right.
So he makes the money, takes all the mugs, punters, entry fees, and it doesn't go back in the club.
So surely
you can say that they're now a championship team again. They're not going to go back down.
Yeah, but we're not a championship team, are we?
Yeah, but you weren't. You were League One for.
No,
quite
we
a while.
Were, so and
at least
you can
say probably cemented
we were,
in that
we were championship when he started. When he started,
yeah,
he pulled us into administration to effectively save the club. I haven't got any qualms with what he's done, but now that we are, he's built us into a business that makes a profit. He's not taking that extra step, not making any kinds of gambles. He's just taking the money and keeping it for himself.
For himself,
that's what it appears to be. On,
for himself
from the outside.
Personally,
yes,
or just keeping the club Arsenal style.
No.
Just
was that company were they rumoured also to try and take over Forest?
No, that was a different family. And they actually did take over.
They
Forest.
Did in the end,
yeah.
Didn't they?
Yeah.
Because that hasn't really worked out that well for Forest yet.
Well, as I think it might have done, to be honest, because you know they were going nowhere after their owner Doughty.
Might have been.
He died last year.
He did die, didn't he?
And as soon as he left, there was like a big gaping hole because he was like, you know, the reason that Forest was staying afloat, staying in business, doing fairly well, spending quite a lot of money on silly managers such as Mr. McLaren. But as soon as he went, no one really knew what Forest would do. And so these guys have come in and they've actually come with
that's
money.
True.
Like they've signed some decent players. I mean,
the championship it seems to be this like whole league of Premiership teams in waiting. Either teams who have been smaller who are ready to make the step up,
yeah,
or teams who have been bigger and gone down who need to get back.
Yeah, and some of the teams that went down a bit too far, like us, like Sheffield Wednesday, they're all back there and they're all fine.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And hopefully the takeover, if it happens, will lead to us being able to, you know, not throw our weight around like £10 million players, like what Blackburn are doing, signing Jordan Rhodes for £8 million, which is silly. Just to be able to compete with everybody else.
But nobody really makes money in this. Like, you know, the businessmen, do they? They come in and they do it for a hobby and it's their...
Football clubs aren't designed to make money.
Exactly. There is huge, huge potential in Leeds to make money. And the main reason is because of the fan base it's got and the fact that it is... Seriously, watching Leeds so far this season, one or two players away from Premier League. And Premier League equals £60 million minimum.
Sure, but...
And if you pay £50 million for the team,
but you can't,
that's
if Bates is selling the club, you can't resent him for not investing his own money in it. Why would he? Like, he's there to sell it.
He's not investing his own money.
But why would he invest
the
club's money? Why wouldn't he take it all?
Well, yeah, of course. You know, he could be in a business to not improve the business. And
yeah,
to
that's it. Who's if he's looking to sell it.
It's not, that's not the way football works.
Who said football clubs aren't made to
Football clubs are not designed to make a profit.
I disagree. I think most clubs could make a profit. They just decide to
But they're not,
take
they're not
a gamble.
The sort of business. They're not. That's not what they're there for. They don't exist to make money. Their business
is
because there's money that comes in.
It's a moral debate, though, isn't it?
Of course it is, yeah. But it's like, actually, in the business world, like, there's the majority, like, the best you can do as a football club is break even, generally. The ones who make profit are very, very rare. And generally, you know, aren't the ones that succeed. I mean, look at Chelsea, Man City. They're not concerned about making a profit, which is the only reason they can succeed, is because they have owners who don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, and you can either spend the money which your owners have, or you can sell on your future, which is what other clubs do, like Leeds in the past, you know, mm-hmm. selling on the fact that, yeah, we're going to be in the Champions League, yeah, we're going to win the league, yeah, we're going to do all of this stuff. So you're banking on your own club's successful future, which is where the football bubble bursts and the money disappears.
Yeah. But winning trophies isn't what makes you money.
It's commercial stuff.
It's selling TV rights.
Yeah, but that comes from winning trophies and being in the Champions League.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
So that's what,
challenging,
you know,
for stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So a massive investor can come in and give you that injection to hopefully take you to that next level.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily guarantee. Like, look at Notts County. That didn't work out. Look at Portsmouth. That didn't work out. I know they won the FA Cup, but it disappears.
Okay, well, you know, Notts County, back in the day, were quite successful. Was Clough at Notts County? As in,
when you say back in the day,
I'm talking about 1970s, let's say.
Further back than that.
Yeah,
sorry, wasn't it? Yeah,
what was the famous story about how Notts County influenced Juventus' shirts?
Yeah, it was. It was like
Juventus opened their new stadium last year, and they invited Notts County to play in the framework.
The point I was going to make was that, so Notts County, you're right, I think it was back maybe 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
But Leeds, I think, are a bigger club. I think they're bigger than Notts County or Portsmouth. And I think actually investment is quite surprising that it's taken so much time for someone to come in for Leeds.
They're a good prospect, aren't they? You think they're well supported, they've got a decent ground already,
exactly.
They're in like a decent position geographically, players don't mind moving to there. It's not like buying some crap old South Coast club.
Is that just because they're debt ridden, they think that nobody would just come in and go, yeah, great fan?
Because they're just not a great prospect. I mean, they're well supported, but they're not that well supported, and you know, they need a lot of infrastructure to make them.
I think your Portsmouths and then Leeds 10 years ago and your Chelsea's and your Man City's, I don't think they represent the majority of football clubs who actually aren't looking to make a loss. They do gambles to hopefully get in a decent position where they're breaking even or even making a profit. Most clubs, if you ask like Everton, you know, Everton are a good example who are trying to do it.
Yes, true.
I'm sure. And some clubs take a gamble and it doesn't quite pay off. But I think even if you look at like a Liverpool or a Spurs spending money, I think they still, I don't think their loss is unmanageable.
No, they're tenable business. I mean, what I meant when I said football clubs aren't meant to make money is that if you're a serious business person, and keep, you know, someone who's a canny investor who wants to make as much money as possible, owning a football club is not the way to do it.
No, absolutely.
Because
it's a publicity exercise, which I think it is for Man City's owners.
It's a bauble, isn't it? But I think the point is the amount of money you put in is not equal to what you get.
No, the risks aren't the same as well. No. You're gambling. You buy any Premier League footballer. I mean, I've got the stats at hand, but you're talking millions. A Premiership footballer, an experienced Premiership footballer, or a European footballer with experience in those competitions cost millions and millions and millions. Now, that player might not work out. He might get injured. There's no return on that investment. The gambles are insane.
Mm.
And you can hire a manager and then be paying them out for 5 years, you know, if they don't work out. So,
yeah.
But not many clubs have fallen foul of that. In England, probably about four or five.
The problem is, though,
have bought lots and lots of players, and had a real problem.
But Newcastle had a big problem, and they were quite fortunate. And I think you do see they'll call on the investors and say, "Look, we're in trouble. Yeah, we've bought a player for £8 million. He hasn't worked out. We need another £8 million in investment from our shareholders or somewhere." Look at the Glaziers. I mean, they've had to spend all that money just sort of to keep the, you know, to, what it called? Put it in the black.
Yeah.
The bank was to refinance it.
Interesting with Newcastle, though, isn't it? Because it had been for the last few seasons, like, have a good player, sell him on. And actually, the person I work with is a big Newcastle fan. I was talking to him about Demba Ba. He goes, yeah, it's a good season, but it'd be off. That's why we bought Cissé.
Yeah. Well, actually, he's been ready to go in January.
It's been quite interesting because they had so much problems. Like, who liked the owners there? They've changed the name of the stadium, the Sports Direct Arena. But actually, it's starting to work out for them. And I actually, even though I hate it, City, you know, we look at Chelsea, how many managers they had, and, you know, what
since... What, under Abramovich, seven or eight?
Yeah. The thing with City, which I kind of like, you know, we're talking about not just about profit, actually making a proper club that's going to be successful. After the first season, Mancini could have gone. After only winning maybe the FA Cup, he could have gone. But they stuck with him. And also now, I thought after winning the Premiership, it's like, oh, God, here we go. There's the next four or five really big stars to go there. But they are investing in English talent. You know, Sinclair and Rodwell. I think Rodwell's probably moved at the right sort of time. Sinclair is a weird signing, but I also think it seems like even though there's lots of money and it could be ridiculous, they are trying to make some sort of legacy. And you know, Mancini's been there for what, four seasons?
This is his fourth season.
I mean, it's testament to them. They haven't gone too crazy like Chelsea.
And they're off the field investments as well. Like Man City have put a lot of money into developing area,
loads of
training
stuff
ground.
It, yeah.
They're building for the future. It's quite strange actually. I feel sorry for Chelsea in the fact that they are in a situation that if Abramovich was to leave, they're not particularly well set up from a stadium point of view.
There is all of their fans
going back to Fulham. They're crying in their £1 million houses. Yeah, that's awful.
There is, well, most of them live in their cabs, but like, there is the youth infrastructure. They've built an amazing training complex and all that sort of stuff. I mean, as far as I know, what you mean as far as there isn't the space to develop a stadium.
But theirs, their way of operating has certainly been buy-in, big money signings, three or four in collective chunks.
Yeah.
Like when things are going wrong, you won't be able to do that if, say, he left, say. But maybe City might be in a position to do that. We don't know.
But you talk about legacy and you talk about like longevity and success and the bubble bursting there. And you say Everton or Arsenal don't do that and they don't take the risk. And loads of other clubs, but you know, they're pretty good examples. They're not competing though. Like, they're not competing for silverware. No. Not now. And they struggle to, though, really.
Yeah, but in this country, no club has ever been the best club forever in this country. If we were doing this podcast 20 years ago, we would, A, have the access to the best technology available. And B, we'd be banging on about how Liverpool would probably dominate forever.
Well, Liverpool are great.
I mean, 20 years ago.
Liverpool Spurs spent a lot of money, and it's not necessarily doing them much better than Everton or...
No, exactly. That's sort of my point. So to come back to Dave's investors, it's not necessarily a good thing. Mm. That is sort of what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just not saying it's always... When an investor comes in, everyone's so excited. Doesn't mean that much.
Only if it's an Abu Dhabi group or something like that. Somebody who's going to go, right, we're going to take the risk, we'll spend 30 million on Rubinho in one transfer window. QPR aren't doing that.
I suppose it's Portsmouth as well. They had an owner... And they didn't even know he existed.
Yeah.
It was actually like a made up person bought that club. Like, you've got to be, as long as the money's real. And it tends to be the more real is from, at the moment, from sort of Saudi Arabia, Abu Dhabi, that sort of thing.
I suppose I agree with you. And I think the point I was also making why I think it could be a good thing for Leeds is they do have the stadium, the fans. You buy a couple of players. I think just those home games would be fantastic if they started really rocking it. Like Southampton, for example, I mean, completely different, but you know, they started well, they kept up the whole season. That was just belief that they could get back into the Premiership. Yeah. And you know, investors, and who knows, and Warnock could probably get them up to the Premiership. I don't know if he's going to be good enough.
But that could be
also a bad thing as well. If an investor comes in and he doesn't do well by Christmas, he's gone.
Well, Warnock said that the only reason he's come to Leeds is because he's at his best opportunity to get his eighth promotion, which would make him the man with
that's
the most.
That's kind of
promotions.
Amazing, isn't it? Like, he gets a lot of shit, Neil Warnock, but that's an incredible record.
Yeah,
he's very good.
We are very good at
making that jump. As we know, the Premier League is like the top level of it. It's a completely different style of football, and it's about ability and the individual players you've got. So he can put a team together and make them difficult to beat and rouse them up for one-off cup games and things like that.
But what's amazing is how much things change.
He needs to have the trust and be given the money.
I think he's the sort of manager that isn't going to do well in the Premiership now. I mean, we've seen it
I agree.
Last year. I mean, okay, so we
Tony
are...
Tony Pulis?
So Bolton was the archetypal team for a team coming up, big lads, long balls, and that'll be fun, that'll keep you up. Stoke, to be fair, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Pulis, but he has tried to change that team in the way to actually play football.
And he's got the backing of his chairman.
Yeah, he's
got a match.
And then look at the
Swansea.
Like
a Stoke do make
when
Bolton
Swansea came
from
up,
5 years ago.
Swansea last year, and Norwich as well, they're playing football, and this all comes down for big teams in the Championship, knowing that you can't just play long ball football, you have to actually have tactics. And I think those are the sort of teams that will do well when they come up. It's just funny now that we're actually getting managers leaving those clubs after 1 year to go to the biggest step, which is new.
If I necessarily agree, though, like, because look at West Ham and Sam Allardyce. Like, he gets so much stick from his own fans for not playing the West Ham way, playing his sexy football. And it's nonsense, because he'll keep them in the Premier League. Like, I'm sure he will.
I'm not sure about that. Why is that a definite? He's going to keep
him up. It's not definite, but I'd be very surprised if they go down. No, the worst teams. He's an experienced manager with experienced players, good Premiership players. I'd be surprised if they go down. I don't think when he's a manager, in my opinion, the fans don't like him. The Blackburn didn't like him. Newcastle didn't like him.
They get rid of him.
They get rid of him.
It's like the Arsenal.
But then it gets worse.
The Ukraine.
We all know how crazy Blackburn
is. Yeah, it gets worse without Sam Allardyce. It was in sometimes it's almost better the devil you know. Like. And I think, these experienced managers
who made Bolton Wanderers an established Premier League side, didn't he?
Exactly. And you look at Tony Pulis, and I know he's changing it now, and they are bringing in more footballing type of players, but they're an established Premier League club. They're not going down at all now, because they're players who they brought up as inexperienced youths, like, what's his name, the captain? Shawcross. He's now an experienced experienced Premiership player. Dalap's the same.
Do you know,
they're not going to be naive to Premiership tricks and tactics and things that go
What's funny is that we talk about the Championship, we rave about who's looking good in the Championship. How many times have you seen a team absolutely storm the Championship, get into the Premier League and just be dog shit? And then again, you'll see a team like Blackpool come up through the playoffs and play some really exciting football and just really perform. Like, you can't read anything from Championship promotion form, it seems.
What I would say, though, is that just say Tony Pulis, the style of football he plays, in a weird, twisted fashion, it means a lot of his players, he doesn't have star performers in that sort of way, which means that they're less likely to get nabbed, I think. If you play like it's a true. Sexy style of football like Swansea do, you have individuals that stand out, and then people start going, oh, he's a really good footballer.
Yeah.
And they think, can he make the technical jump up? And your team can get picked apart. It even happens to teams higher up the league, like Arsenal. Yeah. So teams get picked apart. If there's somebody that goes, he can really play football, and send him up.
The second year is really important. I mean, point I just made for my first little rant about this was that, you know, it's quite odd this season that the managers have left. So Rodgers saw an opportunity to move himself up, kind of like his career.
Yeah,
right.
But the managers are doing
Swansea
what the players did.
Went back down
ago,
and he's
yeah.
fine. He went as well. I mean, obviously Laudrup's got experience and he'll be fine, but it's a new team.
Yeah,
so it's going to take him some time to do it. I mean, you know,
it's very risky from a point of view of a club like that, who's like, they're not an established Premier League side yet. So they could easily have making a big managerial change. Obviously, it wasn't there. Swansea, I was thinking about.
They didn't have a.
Well, they're very much one of the small guys.
Allegation fodder.
Yeah. This has been a very very loose, unstructured conversation so far. So I think
made it out.
I thought it was really good.
It's quite fun. But I think I wanted to ask you guys some questions. I want to know what your favourite moment of the season this so far has been. So we've had a weird summer, because we had that huge summer where, after the Olympics, the Euro seemed like a long time ago. So when domestic football's come back, it feels like it's taken a little while to ease back into it.
Yeah.
I think everyone's had a slightly strange start to the season. No teams in the Premier League have really dominated. No one's played that well, I don't think. Maybe Everton have overachieved and Chelsea have only dropped 2 points, but haven't actually looked massively dominant in any one game yet, I don't think. I don't know what you guys think of real highlights or real kind of talking points out of the Premier League so far.
I mean, the Spurs United game is probably a bit of a bit of a talking
point.
Well,
that's
point.
The most recent, I
suppose. Yeah, and it's most recent, conveniently. That was pretty quite exciting. I was saying earlier, actually, sort of not really a highlight as such, but just general talk.
Of every kind.
A loose topic. We're talking about just managers in the media and how they assess certain people. So I was looking at AVB.
Yeah.
You know, they were creating these just nonsense stories about how he's under pressure and how they should get rid of him and he shouldn't be there after two games. And it's just like, well, that's ridiculous. And then 5 or 6 games in, they beat Man United, they've got a couple of wins under their belt, and now it's like, oh yeah, Spurs doing this. It's like, hang on a second.
What were the papers?
Like,
he's
the same man.
Bullshit
he's
to
the
sell
same
papers,
man.
Isn't it?
Bollocks.
It's absolute bullshit.
Like, when Man United first won the Premier League, I think they lost, was it 3 out of the first 5 games or something?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It just goes to show there's absolutely no point in assessing where you're at when you're so early at the start of the season. Obviously, momentum's important.
So you're saying we may as well not be here? Is that what you're saying? I'm saying why even talk about football this early in the season? Let's all come back in February and then we'll know.
I just think at the moment you can't really make too many sort of huge statements because anything, like, it's, I think after or around the Christmas period, that's when you start to know where you're at because the fixtures come thick and fast and you really sort of see what's going on. You know, I think if you're in the bottom 5 at Christmas, you're in real trouble.
Yeah.
And if you're not in the top couple, 2 or 3, you're not going to win the Premier League.
Yeah.
You know, so at the moment you can't really say too much about it, but I just think that the way the media gets going and talked about AVB, and sort of similar thing with Martin O'Neill, you know.
Yeah.
Martin O'Neill hasn't won since March or whatever it was.
It's
and then all of a sudden, it's Martin O'Neill's unbeaten in the Premier League this season. He's the same bloke. Like, suddenly they're the same team. They just happened to win this week, and now we're amazing.
I wanted to ask you about that, actually, as far as, like, I think Sunderland's form since, the first half of the year, it's almost gone unnoticed, I think. Or certainly by me, anyway. That's quite how bad it's been.
Yeah, but is it?
You know, because they haven't won in the league for.
No, we haven't won in a while.
A
but we're
time.
Not really losing.
No,
either.
No, but that's what it doesn't look
and
as bad as that sounds. If you know.
No, look, we had a very poor end of season last year. Mm. Like, the second half of the season after the start we made was very disappointing.
Yeah.
But I still feel like I'm satisfied with the way things are because I'm not a total reactionary. I don't think you should look at just a short term. I believe Martin O'Neill's an excellent manager and he's proved it throughout his career. We've got good players in there.
Yeah.
So what's the problem? Like, we're not we've got to be realistic and know where we are.
If you're comfortable with the fact that you are a mid-table team,
look,
I suppose.
I'd be delighted with that because quite frankly, that is as good as it's ever been in my lifetime.
Sure.
So I remember most of my time watching football, we're a yo-yo club.
Yeah.
And that's rubbish. Like, being in a championship and not getting promoted is bloody rubbish. We're settled now.
So let's be happy with that.
I
think as well, I think we spoke about this recently, like, Sunderland, it's fair to say, became the big northeast team for a while because Newcastle went down.
The pendulum swung, didn't it?
Yeah, and I think actually now Newcastle on the ascendancy, obviously playing good football. They've put maybe a little bit more money to be able to buy players, maybe more of an attractive club for some sort, you know, for the history
of
it.
Of course.
So I think they're doing very well in, you know, for where they are now. I think if you're looking in that area, you probably would go for Newcastle.
Yeah.
And players do. You know, that's where I think it was Denver Bar went. You know, he was offered Sunderland and he went to Newcastle. And,
yeah.
No, it happens. But Sunderland fans, but anybody who's in that that bracket at the moment, like Stoke or Sunderland, or anybody you'd care to think, hang on, a few years ago you weren't in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Just be happy with what you've got. Don't get stupid.
Don't get starry-eyed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Look, Martin O'Neill probably, I'd like to think, in the next 5 years, if he's still manager then, would have got us into Europe, which would be incredible. If he doesn't happen this year, so what?
The whole thing, it'll probably be his decision, as it usually is with Martin O'Neill, to leave the club.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what will happen.
With that in mind, Matt, and what you've just said about you potentially being happy with mid-table, would, going back to the conversation we've just had about takeovers and investment, would the investors who've shelled out £30 million over this summer agree with that?
Well,
is that something that O'Neill's got to worry about? Is that why the newspapers are starting talking about it?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I can only hope not, because I just see when... Look at a club like Everton, who've had a stable manager in David Moyes for so long, and what they're doing. And there's other examples out there. Prior to David Moyes, Everton changed their manager like you change your socks. It was ridiculous.
Once every 2 years.
All the time, just exactly. And they were nowhere. Like, I know they never got relegated, but from when they won the FA Cup until David Moyes came in, Everton were just consistently a bad Premiership side who were lucky not to be relegated on about five or six occasions. So
proper script,
and they just because they kept chopping and changing.
See, what's funny though, you talk about like changing manager. Look at the clubs that have changed managers regularly across Europe. A lot of the biggest ones: Real Madrid, Inter Milan, Chelsea.
That's completely different.
What I'm saying is
If we're doing Italy, we're talking about like Sampdoria, or we're talking about Fiorentina.
They've changed managers regularly as well.
They're also mid-table teams when they used to be, you know, shit hot back in the beginning of the.
No, of course, but I think we possibly put too much emphasis on stability. Like, statistically, if you look at it, changing manager doesn't affect.
Unless you're like a super club at the top.
Changing manager doesn't actually affect final league position as much as we like to believe it does.
I think you're wrong. I think
it's not as big a factor as we think.
When you go into a club and they're having a terrible run and having to get the best out of players that you wouldn't buy. You know, I think Steve Bruce was unlucky. He never got any of the fans really too happy with him. But he get the best team behind it. He might not even have to go and do that. It was an impossible situation. You looked like you were going down and came back. Or when, because I have a Fulham season ticket, when Sanchez was in place, he got a lot of players from Northern Ireland in the side. And they were,
for a lot of money.
For a lot of money, yeah.
The manager influences how the look
for,
of
for
the
Healy, but no, but, place he, to choose. But then Roy Hodgson came in and he kept him up. But it took a long time. It still took probably about 7 or 8 games to start playing the Hodgson start.
The last throw of the dice, football. Isn't it, for chairman to sack managers? I mean, sometimes you think it's probably the only thing they could do.
Yeah.
Sometimes, in Mr. Jez Robson's perspective, sometimes it's a ridiculously stupid thing to do. There's no real need to sack
managers. Managers tend to stay a long time at big clubs when they take over that club, the club's not doing very well.
Yeah.
Then they have a period where they stabilise them and then push on for success. Mm-hmm. Then they tend to keep their jobs. But if the club's already doing well, it's a really risky place to go.
But Manchester United and Arsenal are the only clubs in Europe I can think of that have had managers for longer than for that long. But the big clubs in Europe.
15-20 years thing is very rare now, definitely.
There's no one else.
I think 4 years now is considered a long time.
Going on to Arsenal, Seb, do you think it's actually one of Wenger's best summers for buys?
I think it's a simple thing with Wenger. He's just bought experienced players.
He's bought, full stop.
He's bought experienced players who
which is different.
So they may not be, they're not players that besides Cazorla, who I think is brilliant, I think the other players, the biggest clubs in Europe would think twice about going for them. But I still think Arsenal got good money deals on all those experienced players. To get Podolski's
the shrewdest buy that Wenger's made
for 12 million.
Can't believe how old is he, like 28?
He's the youngest
German to reach 100 caps.
So what was it? 2000? Yeah, Euro 2000 was that? Was his first tournament?
No, he's like World Cup 06.
He's not been around as long as you think.
He's got a lot of international goals. So him and what's his name?
Closer.
They've always been
the goal scorers. Every tournament you can remember watching.
Yeah, 2006. The German teams in 2000 and 2002, 2004, pretty ropey.
Yeah.
Still reached the World Cup final. No, pretty ropey.
I was in Finchley Park watching the Arsenal Chelsea game on. And there's a big, in front of him is a big fat guy, really, really fat guy, with his Arsenal shirt on. And on the back, he had Podolski 9, and then letters underneath the 9 with German engineering. But he was so wide that the word engineering really fit quite nicely across his
German engineering.
Spare time.
German engineering.
All in the right letters. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Well, I think the way. Fingers brought in experienced players, and obviously Steve Bould's effect shored up the defence a little bit. But the problem is that when you're at the highest level and you're trying to win trophies, your holes in your side get picked out really quickly when it comes to the big games and the real crux, and you're needing a lot of luck to win trophies that way. Mm. Whereas the best way is to, if you seal up all your gaps, then you'll just be unlucky to lose a lot of these matches. And you can see that with Chelsea, even when they lost to Barcelona, everywhere you looked on that pitch were very, very good players, even though they're playing against a really good Barca team. You're still looking around, you're going, I can trust that player not to fall over.
Yeah,
I can trust that player not to put the ball into his own net. I can trust that keeper to catch the ball and save a penalty or whatever. And that's the problem Arsenal have, is that they always have holes, and if they strengthen somewhere, they get weakened somewhere else.
But it's frailties, isn't it?
If you watch the Chelsea game again, some of those chances in that game, I mean, Van Persie would have put them away. No problem. That chance at the end that Giroud had.
Mm-hmm.
If you're asking every season a new player to come in,
adapt
again, it's like you're starting again every season to just get over the line.
Yeah,
It's like having a relay team of decent sprinters. But every season you keep bringing in a new one, and he keeps dropping the baton on the last leg. And
Let's give it a couple of years till they're all been there.
Exactly. But I think the cups are. Everyone always looks at the Capital One Cup, for example.
I've been going to the Capital One Cup for years.
And our Everton fans will probably be disappointed that they're out.
Yeah. I think City fans will as well, probably.
Maybe. But the Everton fans, we've had a great start to the season. We're difficult to beat. And to be honest, the cup is the one, really, because we can, you know, I think we've had a good cup run.
They took 5,000 fans to Old Trafford. Obviously keen.
Definitely.
That would definitely break a big, like, hoodie for Arsenal, especially just to lift anything.
Arsenal got a bizarre.
You think it would just change the whole outlook of the
club?
They've
got a bizarre record in all these competitions. As I say, they've got this great run of being in the Champions League 16 straight seasons, whatever.
Yeah.
The League Cup, they've had a record for straight quarter final appearances. Yeah. All these random sort of.
You've been in the final a few times since the last one, though.
Yeah, twice. Yeah. When Drogba did the business again.
Isn't that usually when your season collapses as well?
Yeah.
An appearance in that final means
the February collapse.
Yeah.
imagine if you won it. Go on and win everything.
This is what I'm saying though. I think if Arsenal got that albatross from off around their neck, they would just people would stop giving them shit about not having one of the things.
I don't think it would make a difference in the Champions League. You know, when I watched Arsenal play Barcelona, you know, it was very similar to the Chelsea games.
Were you there?
Was it Chelsea Barcelona? Not Arsenal Barcelona.
Yeah.
Arsenal Barcelona.
When
he got booked and sent off. Yeah, that was a very, that was very, very close to knocking Barcelona out, especially when Wilshere put the ball through and Nicholas Bentner was on the end of the chance, like 87th minute.
Anyone but Bentner.
And he went, he did that really lazy Bentner thing with him, I'm Nicholas Bentner, no problem. Oh, shit. You know, it's not one of those.
That's the impression, yeah, that's your.
Sticking with that as your best.
Generic Arsenal 1.
Anyone know how he's getting on at Juve? Because Juve are absolutely flying.
Send me a text, man, as well.
Yes,
they dropped him.
Has he settled into his new?
They dropped him.
Yeah, he loves it.
He went into the. Obviously, he was third choice behind two other strikers that they didn't sign. One being Van Persie, who they offered like $6 million for, and the other was
Llorente. Was another one.
No, it was a free signing.
He didn't leave.
Didn't
him
end up going.
Didn't leave him.
Anyway, so he was third choice, and he went there, and the first thing they said that he was unfit, and he was so unfit that. He wasn't going to be any use to the squad.
Yeah.
So I assume he's got a number, but
I was disappointed he wasn't playing his number 104. Because remember he doubled his number at Arsenal, 26, and he's like, this season I'm playing in 52 because I'm twice as good as I was last season. What he said.
Twice as fat.
Yeah, so he should be playing 104 because that'd fit.
Did you see what they said at Juventus when they went to sign Bentner about, you know, we didn't obviously get who we want because I think it was Llorente. It was brilliant. I read it in the Guardian. And it was just like, so obviously Bentner wasn't quite our, I'm paraphrasing, but Bentner wasn't our first choice. He was probably our third choice. So we're going to have him. But, you know, hopefully we'll get Llorente sort of around Christmas and then we'll see what happens to Bentner at Christmas.
Let's see what puppy we bought at Christmas if we stop feeding it.
It's just a reassurance.
If he wanders
fans.
Off into the woods. So like, be it.
Just a statement to the fans. This is the best we could get for now. But don't worry, we're not settling.
You can appreciate the honesty.
Ironically, I think they have stopped feeding him. So.
That's the only way to get him back to match fitness.
One positive I'd say: the reason why I'm really pleased about Cathola signing, even though he's brilliant, is also his age. His age is the perfect age to sign somebody that good.
Yeah.
Because he's 27. 16, so if you got him a 4-year contract. you know, you can see him out to that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
if you, you know, he's well, that's not going to get
pinched. And he's at the age when forwards peak as well.
It's a horrible thing to say, and it probably will happen because he's an Arsenal player. He will probably get injured around 28, meaning you'll probably get to your 32 because he'd be that age.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're probably getting for the rest of his career.
And exactly, and he'd be hanging on making the odd substitute appearance like Rizicky.
Yeah.
Is he still there?
He's still there.
The ghost of Rizicky.
He's still there.
He had a bit of a renaissance in the second half last year.
You could just see next year with the Chelsea shirt he sold from Arsenal.
I was going to say either that.
I haven't done it for the
money. Although he has an amazing season after being injured and then Man United by him. Which is yeah, really
Van Persie. But the thing with Van
Persie, just any player.
Thing with, yeah, but if you're going to sell Cthulhu, he's going to be. You're talking like Arsenal aren't going to sell him for 25 million, are they? Well,
9 million bag of chips.
Not at the age he's.
Just so completely.
If you bought him when he was 21, and then you were selling him when he was 27.
So. Did anyone see Match of the Day 2 with Freddie Ljungberg the other day?
Oh, that was brilliant.
Did anyone see that? So yeah, he's on there, and he's trying to do a media career now. He's now retired. And it was him and Mike Lawrenson with good old Colin Murray.
Yep.
I don't know why he presents
that. No, he's alright.
Just loads of, he likes football.
Banter.
Anyway, they were talking about the Invincible season, right? So this is his big break on British TV. And he just goes, yeah, tell us about that team. He goes, well, first he goes, thing is, we're all really good. All right, mate, calm down. I'm sort of like that. But then he goes, the good thing was, if you got taken out in a game, Lauren would kick the shit out of someone.
Lauren?
Yeah. So he said, well, I had Lauren behind me, so he kicked the shit out of him.
He kicked the shit. It's like, I know it's 10, mate. But
we actually
swore. Yeah, he just but it wasn't like afterwards, he wasn't even embarrassed. Like, saw Colin Murray just go, we do apologise. Lauren's just laughing. He's just literally steely eyed going, what?
He went shit. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Have you got a problem? Because I got Lauren in the back.
So that's what always makes me laugh about the pundits, though. You sort of think, oh, come on, guys, it's such an easy job. Just talk. Just be passionate. And you'll get the job again.
Match today.
The BBC, BBC punditry lineup now is as weak as it's ever been.
Well, they've got money. And they've got a money problem, basically.
Well, it seems to be the case. I mean, like
they're losing.
Alan Hansen knows a lot about football. Alan Shearer doesn't know a lot about anything to do with how to be alive or to be like a functional human being. Mark Lawrenson hates football. Mark Lawrenson,
why am I here?
He doesn't
he
like
looks like
football.
An old dog who's dying in the corner and he's moaning because the sound of football is so, on in the
well,
fucking
someone
background.
Tell them to keep it down, Gary.
It's just him and Alan Green sitting in a room.
And Alan Green hates football as well. Shit, yeah.
But the funny thing about Lawrenson was when he did the analysis on the Liverpool-Man United game, and it's just the way he goes, oh, Liverpool fans will hate this. You know, it's just all moaning. So he goes, I just think the ref got all the decisions right. And it's just sort of, it's just so matter-of-fact about it.
How do you ask for his haircut in the hair? How does he get that?
Can I get
like some sort of volcano explosion at the front? You said we keep it long near those sides.
It's just an haircut.
Yeah. I don't care.
I think if you lived in Liverpool in the early 80s, you just got it. It just happens. Something to do with some sort of sewage works quite near the Anfield.
It's like Keegan's hanging on.
Yeah, exactly. It's same with the Tash crew. And it took them a while to realise they could just shave that off. But then the hair just, you're stuck with that for life.
In brighter punditry news.
I bet you're getting bogged down.
Pundit news. Yeah. I reckon Gary Neville is absolutely amazing.
I think all football fans can agree on that.
He is better than the match sometimes, the way he talks about football. I'm not even kidding. He shows...
You have to marry him.
He shows you things that you just don't see. I'll talk about it with passion.
He does things for you.
He does. He shows you...
I heard the same about Jimmy Savile.
He shows you holes in defence and how things break down.
I had to break down your defence.
This is excellent. Keep going, Matt.
Yeah.
Gary Neville, honestly, I just think he's absolutely fantastic. He shows you things and how goals are conceded that are caused by the striker of the defending team not picking up his fullback.
He's a great reader of the game.
He really spots it, and you're just like, you never notice that in normal time. And nobody else in punditry seems like they can be bothered to do their homework.
I think like Hansen is as near as the BBC have got because he can read a game. He tells you once
it's in the 18-yard box. Exactly. This is where he didn't pick up his man, or here's a gap between the two centre backs. But literally, you can see Gary Neville shows you like from about 2 minutes before the goal is scored, saying, here's somebody who hasn't done their job, and this is the impact, and then this is the impact, and this is the impact. And No wonder he was brought in as a coach.
For England.
Yeah, he should be involved in... I'm just looking at him going, this guy, if this is what football coaches are like, then fantastic.
Yeah.
Like,
because, but unfortunately, they're probably not, for the most part.
Obviously, I'm really pleased being a Man United fan.
But I don't think he's too biased to United, though.
Of course, but I'm saying I'm in the minority that have always loved Gary Neville. Because obviously
I think
there's
a lot
fan.
Of clubs who... A lot of people who... Fans of clubs who just hated him when he was a player have now all come
around.
That's
good, and it's hard to do that as well, to change people's mind. But he knows about his football. But did anyone see the first thing he did on the Monday Night Football? His first ever one for Sky. It was a City game. It's the first game of the season last
year. Yeah, I saw it. He was a bit awkward, wasn't he?
That was Swansea, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was in the studio, and Mancini was down obviously, in the stadium. And he went, oh, Gary just wants to ask you something. He just went, hi, Roberto. He's like, yeah, he couldn't really hear. He's like, yeah. He goes, I bet you didn't think I'd be interviewing you. His response, what? And I said, I bet you didn't think I'd be interviewing you. And he literally just went, okay. No banter, not interested.
A few months ago when that thing was after an Everton game, and Phil Neville was, you know, in the tunnel being interviewed, and Gary was in the studio.
Oh, really?
No. And it was a little, there's a clip of it on YouTube. It's about a 5-second long clip. I'm like, and now we go down to Phil Neville. And Gary goes, hello, Philip. And Phil goes, hello, Gary. That's it. There's no this brotherly. Oh, brothers, let's see how this
goes. I'm very serious.
No, it's literally, hello, Philip. Hello, Gary.
Brilliant.
It's moved on.
Professional. I think Gary Neville, though, doesn't want to be associated as part of that sort of
family.
No. But like,
I hate netball.
All the old Man United boys, though, like that sort of group, I mean, he's trying to distance himself from it so that people take him seriously. Definitely. And he's not afraid to have a pop at Manchester United.
Oh, no,
But he'll play on his own experience as well, and he'll talk about, look, this is what happened, but not always in a positive light. You know, he can be very negative.
He's been very negative with Man United, Neville, quite a lot. Even when they're doing well, he always says something like, with the Van Persie transfer, he said, he was like, you know, footballers are grains of sand, it doesn't really matter. Clubs are 100 years old.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like, where's it coming? And even when they won 8-2 last year, he's going, if I'm Man United, I'm still not happy with the way they're shaping that midfield up.
Yeah.
Because they're obviously just relying on just having really open matches and so many chances and everything.
He might be just going out of his way a little bit to distance himself from, so no one can accuse him of Man United bias.
Because Jamie Redknapp doesn't do that, does he? It's quite clear when you watch Jamie Redknapp, there's certain teams he definitely protects and looks after.
Who's that?
Chelsea being one. Yeah.
Redknapp,
definitely. Chelsea being one. Obviously Liverpool and Spurs.
When his dad
finally had a little go, wasn't he?
Yeah, and Chelsea is the Lampard thing, obviously. Yeah. But like, you can definitely see he's always protecting them and everything else. Are we talking about AVB yet, or
we could talk? I mean, like you said it early on. Like AVB is clearly weird. Having had him as Chelsea manager, and I was very keen for him to succeed because he was this hot young manager, and because we've been through so many. He's very hot. He is hot.
Yeah, he's good looking.
He's
a
hot young manager, but I meant sort of, you know, ability wise rather than looks. But
we'll come back to that.
I'm just gonna have a little moment.
AVB, I think if you look at Brendan Rodgers getting the Liverpool job, right?
Yeah.
And everyone, all the media is like, oh, give him time, Brendan Rodgers is great, he's such a good, he's an up and coming young manager, he's trying to put his philosophy on the club, losing matches. But AVB doing the same thing. But yet they're coming out saying he's a fraud and all this sort of stuff. He doesn't deserve this.
I think
he's not experienced enough. But even they were saying this really early with the Chelsea thing.
Yeah.
And you sort of think, this guy's just won, he's won the Europa League, he's won Portuguese League, he's done more than Rodgers has done.
Yeah.
It's quite clear.
The press hate him, though. He never says anything like exciting enough. He doesn't slag anyone off. He doesn't have a go at refs.
He's a smart ass. That's what they think.
Yeah, they think he wants to talk about football, and the press hate that because what's the point in reporting someone saying
they double
hate
him because he's got Harry Redknapp's job?
Yeah.
Mate of the press.
Yeah, because the son.
He reminds me of in the heyday, Fergie and Wenger. That arrogance that I am right and I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, really, well, it's Mourinho, but Mourinho would say
because everyone now, they're diluted, aren't they? Like, everyone, apart from myself, obviously, everyone hates
a lot of humility.
And Wenger was a right arse the whole way through the end of the 90s, but now you go, well, you've got to commend them, look, they're still there. So it's a guy with a bit of balls that goes, actually, this is what I'm, how old is he, 30?
34?
Yeah, but when Wenger came, one of the headlines was like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, they've got a teacher or something. Yeah. And the thing is that it's quite, I can see why the tabloids do it because the audience are doing it too. But I just think with the AVB thing, it's like, you know, you've got to show some aspect of football intelligence, sure.
Of course, yeah.
And so these clubs have, they've obviously gone on a punt based on a decent CV already. You know, you've got to have a decent CV to get the job anyway. Yeah. And I think AVB had the CV to manage Chelsea, definitely.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
Definitely did.
No, it was a good appointment when he went there. Like, no one was complaining about it. Abramovich was young,
wanted to go in a new direction, didn't he? It's quite clear. Abramovich is like, right, I've got these things I want to tick off. I want to win the Champions League.
Yeah.
But now I want them to play attractive football. Yeah. I want them to play, you know, I want them to play attractive football. And that's what they've tried to do.
Which I thought was so exciting about that Arsenal-Chelsea game on Saturday. Because it really was. Especially where it was in the season. Because Arsenal have started off with, you know, sort of quite a tough start to the season. Mm. Chelsea sort of a fairly easy one. But now they've got such similar styles.
Mm.
Which I never thought I'd see the day when Chelsea players would be passing the ball, trying to pass the ball around the way Arsenal players do. It's great.
And then, but both your goals came from set pieces.
But then Laurent Deschamps is
shit Arsenal defending. It's quite funny. It was almost like complete opposite of how they've started the season in a way.
We were saying though when we were watching that, it's an annoying game for, if you're an Arsenal fan, because it doesn't really say that you're having a bad season or you're not as good as Chelsea. You just can't really get anything out of that game. When I watched that, I was like, well, I'm not going to say Chelsea are going to dominate over Arsenal this season. I think they're both going to do well.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I mean, we're such a different club now to how we were.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it's
Di Matteo. It's funny. Di Matteo won the Champions League playing really the Mourinho style, and now he's getting
the Ancelotti style more recently.
Yeah,
but then
but you know, I don't think Ancelotti changed it all that much either, because
that was definitely a continuation in the way.
Now he's getting to do what.
AVB was supposed to do is what Di Matteo's doing.
But I think that's where AVB went wrong. I don't necessarily even believe it was his tactics that cost him the job. I think it was that he rubbed people up the wrong way. So he came in and said, right, I'm going to change everything, and this is how the new way is. And his players went, no, fuck off.
Well, the classic thing was,
and
like,
they just weren't. They didn't even try.
The classic thing was like just dropping. That's drop Lampard probably. That's that's a little power move. That's like a classic. That's like a Steve McLaren dropping Beckham power move.
I reckon AVB had been told to ease the oldies out.
But
things started going wrong,
that was the
easiest fool guy, because he's this young guy who's come in,
and
they sort of said, you know, you don't have to be matey with him, just go in there and just get him out.
The boss. It's not even the McLaren power play with Beckham. It's more like Capello
power play
at Madrid. He dropped him.
Beckham
got himself fit and had a great end of the season.
But basically, it didn't backfire on Capello.
But that's because the Chelsea
got too much.
He lost the dressing room, and I mean that's what it was.
But he never owned it. John Terry
owned that dressing room, and that was the problem. I don't think AVB was tactically wrong necessarily to drop any of those players. He's the manager; he can drop who he wants. But when the other players who are picked go, oh well, if you're not going to play my mate, I'm not going to try very hard. Yeah. Like, you've got a real problem, and
they could get away with saying that in those days.
Exactly, and I think with Di Matteo, first of all, he's probably sort of more matey with them anyway. But also, any changes he makes, he's already won a Champions League, and it can be gradual because he basically gave the players what they want, and now they work for him. Yeah. He can then make the changes, which is what AVB should do at Tottenham. And I think he's learning from that. Any changes he's making to the philosophy are much. Probably going to be a lot slower.
Just gradual.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine how pissed off Hugo Lloris must be right now.
Mm.
But so wait, if it was AVB at Chelsea, he wouldn't have picked a 40-year-old keeper.
No.
He'd have got shot of him immediately.
Yeah, but I think he's learned, hasn't he?
26-year-old goalkeeper.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Although at the same time, now you're rubbing up the other person.
He would be pissed off Hugo Lloris, you're right. Yeah. It's like, what am I doing?
But he is doing the one thing that's good at Tottenham, and given...
Playing people on form,
playing,
I guess.
Playing Defoe, whose head never drops. Even when he's off the on the bench, he still comes and scores. Mm. And actually, Tottenham needs to have people that are going to score goals for him. And I was going to say, that's actually, you asked us to have a fact.
Yeah, go on then.
Actually, they're coming to mind.
Something I might have missed this season.
You may not have missed it. I think a lot of people have.
I've been very busy.
So the Spurs United game, obviously, what a game. Ridiculous 5 minutes and... Spurs played well, and there's a lot of things that Man United need to work on in the team. And I think there's definitely the sense he's already started with the other teams around it. But and this probably comes from the stat I'm going to tell you now. Paul Scholes in that match, 120 passes, 91% completion on those passes. He was absolutely brilliant. Van Persie said
that's Barcelona-esque. Yeah, that's like Xavi in the Aston.
Van Persie said recently, I can't remember the game that Scholes came on. against Southampton, and he said like he's one of the best players or the best player I've ever played with. Now him and Giggs, I think their age between them is like 72.
Yeah.
So, which is ridiculous. Now, Giggs.
You see them though, when they're sat together, if they've both
Giggs,
come off, they look like.
Yeah, I mean,
old
Giggs
men hasn't started. Stabber and Wardorf.
Giggs hasn't. I mean, Giggs hasn't had hasn't great story. I think the player he is, he will probably play less and less, but Scholes is integral to United.
Are United going to do when Scholes goes fight, like, for
again.
Good?
Well, I've said this on quite a few occasions.
Because, like you say, crucial now.
I think still. That Man United were right to buy Van Persie because people forget last year. Okay, City were the best side to win the league. They won goal difference.
Yeah.
Ferguson went, we've got an opportunity to buy a goal scorer who's scoring goals already. That's a good buy. Take him, I understand that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, you're going to have this situation. Now, Vidic is out again. Rio Ferdinand's getting to the end of his career, really. I don't think he's going to play so frequently. Yeah. They've got to make a decision when Johnny Evans, is he good enough to be a Man United centre-back without an old head? I'm still not sure. He had a good season last season. So when you've got a side, okay, so Phil Jones isn't going to be utility. He'll play at the back with Smalling. Is he going to be with him? Is Raphael going to be the person that's being right back?
Yeah.
When are we going to decide on which goalkeeper is right for us? That's just the defence. There's so much there to work on. And a young side. Now, get them together, young team. I think it's starting to show a little bit of Arsenal now with a younger defence, and Steve Bowles come in. It works. It does take some time.
Yeah.
And then in the midfield, well, they didn't decide to buy any defensive midfielders, did they? Well, Fletcher may come back. And I know, I mean, for me, it was a bit of a joke when he first started. I didn't think he was any good. He was good. He may come back, but he's still going to shit himself after 30 minutes, so who knows.
Anderson
to score more goals. Valencia's out. Now, I think there's, in the midfield, I don't know what they're going to do. I think what he's done is, well, we may let more goals in, but if we get some more people in, score more goals.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be very.
Haverwell is going to be a starting midfielder for you to either replace Giggs or Scholes.
But he's
not a middle two man.
But there isn't. It's if you're going to drop, if the plan is to drop Rooney down into the midfield, which could happen. He said he'd be happy to do that because, you know, you've got Danny Welbeck to sign. You've got key players happy, and Welbeck's good enough to start. I think he should start this season. Are you going to go over the three of Van Persie, Welbeck and Rooney? Who knows? It's going to be, at least for me, two or three years of working out what to do with a young team. I'm glad it's only young, but I think there's teams around that are better than United now, and actually they can have that time with maybe the pressure isn't around them. They're never going to drop out for like the top six, but they will. No. Their time is
things are
going
to change. Yeah, the Ferguson era is definitely winding down.
But I think
it's
good that they're not the best team in the league before Ferguson retires, because it actually gives a little bit more breathing space for somebody when they come in.
For someone to come in, yeah.
What's interesting is people talk about forever about how many different teams Ferguson has built, and he has different teams who have succeeded, but he hasn't done any of them without Scholes and Giggs. Mm. It's a really interesting like continuity to that. There is continuous.
He wasn't relying on Scholes and Giggs was the one. About the time when they reached the Moscow finals and stuff like that.
That was
a pretty good.
That was all about.
But they were still
about,
there.
But that was always all about that
Ronaldo.
Opportunity of Ronaldo, Tevez, and Rooney.
Yeah,
it wasn't.
And
it
was, that was an attacking.
Hargreaves
that was an attacking was awesome. Team.
I mean, all of the counter attacking. It would be ridiculous. That movement there, and to an extent, maybe I suppose Scholes, but maybe it was more Keane you looked at in '99 when you had. York and Cole just absolutely ripped up Europe, didn't they?
Giggs was big then.
They've had some players at that club, haven't they?
Yeah.
We haven't got long left, so I think maybe time to do a little Hector Castro award.
Long-term
listeners will, thanks for downloading. We'll remember that what we like to do is we like to give out our Hector Castro award for triumph over adversity in football, named after the man. Uruguay player who won the first ever World Cup. He only had one arm, didn't he, Andy?
He only had one arm.
And so, in his honour, who else have we given it to? We've given it to Bert Trautman, seem to remember.
Someone claimed Steve
McClaren. Steve McClaren.
I think that was my fault.
Was that you?
Yeah. And that might be one I couldn't think of anyone.
Some random Russian bloke.
Oh, Alexander Strelsov.
Was that the guy who went in prison, wasn't he?
Alexander Strelsov was sent to a Russian work camp on trumped-up rape charges.
The Russian lineman.
Did we give it to the Azerbaijani linesman?
Yeah.
Not Russian.
Yeah, that's why I said it. I
wanted
you to show your
he's
brain.
Known as the Russian linesman.
He is, but, but he's from Azerbaijan, and their national stadium is named after him because he's the most successful sports-related person.
He's known as the Russian.
He's not in this country as the Russian linesman, but in no other country, because no other country is as ethnically ignorant as this country. So the person I wanted
there's a few.
The person I wanted to give it to this evening has already been mentioned quite recently, and not in glowing terms. But I thought it was worth mentioning just because if we're talking the Premier League and we're talking longevity, this is someone who... I'll give you some of his honours, just in case you're thinking of doubting it.
This is ridiculous.
4 Premier League titles.
Oh, no.
Only wanted to see...
Who's he giving it to?
1 FA Cup, 2 League Cups, 1 Champions League, 1 World Club Cup. He's recently returned after 11 months out of the game.
Okay, it's not.
Maybe you don't even think it is.
He's
just been selected for his national team for the first time in 11 months.
Don't tell us. Let's guess.
Oh, I know. It's Darren
Fletcher.
Manchester United midfielder.
Yeah.
Darren Fletcher. Who did you think I was going to say?
I thought you were going to say John Terry. I don't know why.
I was really
so
not.
So where's his triumph being picked for Scotland again?
Coming back.
He's been out for 11 months with a chronic bowel disorder that's kept him out of training and out of playing football. Well, if you're not, you don't agree with me, that's a bit sad. I wanted to ask you, Andy, actually, what you think Darren Fletcher brings to Manchester United and has done in time.
I don't know why. So many times, those big games, a little bit of the way that Park used to be as well, just like in Chelsea, he just rip up Chelsea so well every time we play against Chelsea.
Wasn't it a pleasure to bring him up for this?
I don't know. I think Darren Fletcher would be good to have a captain's armband.
Yeah.
Is he good enough to be Man United captain? Probably not. But I think responsibility is good for him.
Right.
I think it's really important just to have a defensive midfielder.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think he proved himself when he first came out. He looked a bit gangly, but you know, it wasn't the greatest player, but he worked a lot on his defensive play because he used to be very many just going to the box, having a couple of shots. But he's solid. He doesn't ever look it, but I think he's good. Yeah. And I think if you're going to look for the future, which is the mid future, him and Anderson. If you're going to have something for Anderson who's just going to sit there and let him do stuff, he'll work well there.
But he is
I still don't know.
So you're saying you're building a team around Anderson?
No, I don't.
No, Ralph Fletcher. He's only 28.
I think...
Who?
Fletcher. Which is weird, because I think, again, he's one of the players I think of as being around.
I think he's been a great positive.
But I also don't think that Alex Ferguson is interested in getting involved in a bidding war with people for players. And I think that he also won't go in a bidding war with players... for teams like Everton, no disrespect to Everton, but they haven't got the budget. So I think actually what happened, Man United are going to find themselves in a situation where if you're not going to buy people like Anderson, you're going to stick with them. If you're not going to buy better, you're going to have to stick with them. People are going to have to.
Don't you think Fergie tends to do in the transfer market is he never gets into a big bidding war with the big clubs around Europe. He tends to pick the best players from the level below the top. Say like for
he's missed out
performing
on
well for like
Van Persie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But what I mean is
who everyone wanted.
Yeah, I mean he doesn't go. Yeah, but no one was. He wasn't in a bidding war with anyone for Van Persie, was he?
He just probably tapped him up.
I don't think you can actually say that on a podcast.
Well, since because
allegedly.
They offered 24 million, and Juventus offered 6.
Well, yeah, this is it, isn't it? But I don't know. I think Darren Fletcher was nice. It was a story I saw today actually on the BBC website about his standing ovation he got from the Man United fans, which is nice. He's not a player who gets talked about a lot.
No. I
think he's well liked at his club.
Like, as that era of people like Vidic and Evra and himself that came through, and you're going, am I really going to be all that good? He's come through. And he's a decent player.
Yeah.
Do I think he's the way for us to get through this? Probably not. For his transition, I don't think.
Yeah,
he's
of course,
a,
yeah.
I think he's better when there's people playing much better around him.
Yeah.
But my point was maybe if it's someone like a captain's armband, could change a player, and I think he could be like Phil Neville's been for Everton. You know, that kind of like a player that actually can week in week out.
Useful, experienced,
and sometimes actually, and he does it with Scotland. I mean, obviously it's Scotland, but you know, sorry, Matt.
Careful.
I'm sorry,
careful.
But you know, maybe that would help. But
yeah,
is he quite close to the captain's armband?
United, because I mean Vidic is becoming injury prone.
Well, yeah, Rio's never going to play. He never gets it. Evra's looking a bit past it. Probably got a season.
Does it affect Rooney positively?
He's not ready for it. He won't be that far away if he came back. He wouldn't be that far anyway, because it's, and that's the same night I'm talking about Darren Fletcher as captain.
And on that bombshell of a way to end the podcast, we have reached our hour.
Didn't even mention handshakes.
We'll have a nice polite handshake later. We'll see who shakes hands with who. Thank you to all our pundit guests here. To Dave, Matt, Residence. Seb, Andy, and me.
What a return.
It's nice to be back.
Cheers.
London 2012, football basement. We'll be
Legacy.
Back soon. Bye.
Bye.